This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. You may consider the oyster catcher the clown of the bird world. It has pink legs, a long orange bill, and bright yellow eyes. And the eastern population of the oyster catcher is in danger. There are only about 11,000 in existence, and researchers are doing everything they can to make sure they stick around. Lindsay Addison is a coastal biologist for Audubon, North Carolina, and she's involved in a project to track the migratory patterns of these beach birds and trying to get a better understanding of where they go, and she hopes that that will allow science to find better ways to keep them alive. Lindsay Addison joins us now by phone. Lindsay, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit more about these birds. Where do they live, and is it that easy to recognize them? They sound like a brightly colored bird.
They are very easy to recognize. There's no doubt when you're looking at an oyster catcher that that is what you're seeing. They're found all along the Atlantic seaboard from Maine to the Texas Gulf Coast, and that population, as you said, is about 11,000. So although that's not a lot of birds, because they do rely exclusively on the coast, if you're at the beach or in marsh habitat, you have a pretty good chance of seeing one.
Which suggests that they're not highly endangered. I mean, where are they on the spectrum of endangered species, and how did they get there?
In North Carolina, they are a species of special concern. The Partners in Flight has them as a species of high concern. Partners in Flight is a bird conservation consortium. And what a species of special concern means is that there's some aspect of the bird's life history that makes it vulnerable to declines. And what makes the oyster catcher vulnerable to population declines is the fact that it relies exclusively on the coast, and being a bird found in beaches and in other coastal areas brings it into competition for habitat with humans, because we like to enjoy the coast as well.
All right, so what kind of measures are in place already to protect them?
The American Oyster Catcher Working Group was formed about 10 years ago, which is made up of people all along the Atlantic seaboard from state and federal agencies as well as NGOs, all of whom work with the American Oyster Catcher. And this group's been meeting and working together for oyster catcher conservation since about 2002 or 2003. And by working together in order to address population-level issues, problems that are found throughout their range, such as human disturbance, human commensal predators, things like that, the American Oyster Catcher Working Group's been able to leverage conservation for the oyster catcher throughout its range. And in 2009, a group of partners, including Audubon, North Carolina, North Carolina State University, and the North Carolina Wildlife Conservation Commission, have received a grant to do additional oyster catcher work from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. And that has helped us to protect more nesting habitat, deal with predator control issues, and carry out scientific studies that have addressed questions about things such as effects of disturbance on oyster catchers, effects of predators on oyster catchers, effects of type of foraging habitat available to oyster catchers. So there's been a lot of work done in the past 10 or 12 years on oyster catchers specifically to address their conservation needs.
Well, and so what does that mean, and particularly for humans that come in contact? Are there restrictions then for humans who might come in contact with the oyster catcher? How does it play out?
Sure. Well, like all migratory birds, oyster catchers are protected by the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which just means that it's illegal to harm them or disturb them. But more practically, where oyster catchers are found nesting, like all other beach nesting birds, they typically receive a bird posting, which basically keeps people from entering their nesting areas. You can imagine that if a giant got loose in a maternity ward, the people in the maternity ward might be a little bit stressed out about the welfare of their babies. So the beach nesting birds have to contend with a lot of different factors: high tides, storms, predators, and because people use the beach as well, human disturbance is an issue. Beach nesting birds nest on the sand, typically in open, bare, sandy habitats. They make a little scrape in the sand, so their eggs are fairly exposed. They like to be there out on the beach because they can see predators approach, and because if they're on an island, there's usually not as many predators as if they were on the mainland. So a barrier island or an inlet spit is a good habitat for them. But when people show up, it can be a problem because people walking through nesting areas disturb the birds, causing them to leave their nests, causing them to leave their eggs or chicks exposed to temperature stress or predators. So,
I'm wondering too, because if those giants in the maternity ward say, well, like to tan themselves on the beach or drive off-road vehicles along the sand, they might not be so happy with your restrictions on a species of baby that isn't them. Does this cause some conflicts on the coast?
Occasionally it does, but the birds are protected by law, and most people, their value system states that it's really not the right thing to do to disturb an animal that's trying to raise its young. So there are occasional spots of conflict, but typically we don't have a lot of trouble with people entering our bird entering areas that have been posted as off limits.
Let me ask you about your project now. You're going to try to track these birds. What do you hope to gain from the data?
Well, what we're hoping to do is to find out more about the size of the area of habitat that they use during breeding and during wintering. And we also hope to learn about how they move down the coast when they migrate. So American oyster catchers breed as far north as Maine, and they winter from about New Jersey to Florida. And so we're hoping to have six birds with satellite transmitters, and we're hoping that these birds will retain their satellite transmitters and send us their locations as they move down the coast and learn about stopover sites that they use. So places that they, if they're going from North Carolina to Florida, do they stop over in Georgia or South Carolina? How long do they stay? What areas do they use? And all that information is useful for conservation because we understand what are the habitats that these birds need in order to survive. What we also hope to do is to introduce people on the coast to the American oyster catcher and give them a little bit of information about the birds, as well as making it personal for them. Introducing them to individual birds instead of to a species is a good way to make people have empathy and interest in a bird. So having an individual that you're following that you can get to know through a website.
When you get to that point, let me ask you about that, the education part of it. I mean, what are you going to say when people ask you, particularly those who like to ride their off-road vehicle on the beach, and you've posted it, and they say, why should I care about this?
Well, number one, our organization does not actually we don't manage areas that have beach driving. We've been involved, obviously, with Cape Hatteras in getting conservation measures for birds and restrictions on beach driving that have increased bird numbers on Cape Hatteras since the implementation of the improved bird protection measures in 2008. But again, if you have 20 miles of beach and you have 5 miles that's being used by oyster catchers, then it doesn't seem people ought to feel as though they can't go to the beach. They just can't go to a section of the beach that's being used by a bird to raise its young. And
let me ask you this. You're going to have information now about its habitat. How is that going to help you in the conservation effort?
Well, we already know that broadly the types of habitats that oyster catchers use, we know that they use shell rakes, marshes, barrier islands, but we'd like to know specifically what areas are they using and how long are they using them, what time of year are they using them. And then what we can do is we get a better picture of how the bird's using habitats along the coast. If there are areas that are going to be slated for some type of development that are going to receive some sort of change in the type of use that they're receiving, we can look at measures we could take to help protect the birds. And sometimes that can be as simple as just educating people that, hey, there's a lot of oyster catchers here that winter here. There might be a flock of 300 birds. They're busy feeding. They're busy resting. And if you see a bunch of birds, just walk around them. Don't flush them. So they don't have to use their energy flying away from you. So it can be something as simple as that. It could be something more complex, such as trying to protect an inlet from a detrimental engineering project.
You think there's actually a chance of increasing the population of oyster catchers?
We actually already have increased oyster catchers, the number of oyster catchers nesting in the state of North Carolina. Since 2004, when we had 327 breeding pairs, we're now at 369 in 2010. So we're seeing a slow and steady increase in the population, which is really exciting, because earlier on in the mid-2000s, their population models suggested that they were going to lose at least 10% of their population along the eastern seaboard in about 10 years. And now it appears that we're seeing a slow and steady increase, thanks in large part to the extra effort and attention they've received through all the partners in the American Oyster Catcher Working Group that have focused their efforts on protecting them throughout their range.
All right. Well, Lindsay, thank you very much for talking with us.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Lindsay Addison is a coastal biologist with Audubon, North Carolina. This is the State of Things, and just ahead, we'll find out why teenagers act as crazy as they do. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.